candidates running. It's you, Geraldine, and your opponent is Tom Cleveland. We did try to contact Mr. Cleveland several times via email, phone calls. He hasn't acknowledged. So we're going to be covering the race just with you, Geraldine, speaking about your positions and you know, why people should vote for you.
Okay. It's always nice to hear from both, but we did our best to try to make that happen, and we'll just go forward. But I think first, Chris and Geraldine, we should hear the weather from the National Weather Service. Currently, it's 41 degrees. Slight chance of showers today, 20%. And as you said yesterday, Chris, having showers and rain is a good thing. We'll look forward to that. Otherwise, mostly sunny with highs around 62. Partly cloudy tonight, low 40. A little warmer this evening. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high 68. And tomorrow night, mostly clear, low 39.
And I think to the weekend, we're talking about in the low 70s even.
So oh, my goodness.
Weather's looking really good.
Wonderful.
Friday, it's breezy, so you could take out a kite and fly a kite.
Yes, you can always fly a kite. Go fly a kite.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to, without further ado, we're going to jump into our main topic today. Again, we have in the studio with us Geraldine Lewis, candidate for Zone 4 school trustee seat. Geraldine, that's the seat that's currently held by Mindy Cameron.
Yes.
For last 8 or 10 years, I think.
I think even more than that. Yeah. Maybe 12. Yeah.
I think the first thing to clarify for voters, or at least potential voters out there, is where is Zone 4? In this particular election, unlike a county commissioner race, where they have their own districts, but everybody gets to vote for all of them. In this race, you have to vote for candidates within your district. So can you describe where Zone 4 is?
It is. It's a confusing zone. In fact, I had to learn quite a bit about it myself when I put my name in the hat. So Sagal, but only Sagal east of Highway 95 and north of Dufert Road. So that was kind of one of the things I learned. Also the Garfield Bay area and all the way around Gamlin Lake, those people are in Zone 4. But then, you know, north of the lake over in Kootenai and Odin Bay, those areas are also Zone 4 up to Jacobson Road. So it's a wide zone. It has two elementary schools, Kootenai Elementary, Sagal Elementary. Those schools are both in Zone 4.
And so the people that live in the Sagal area east of the highway and stretching north up into Kootenai, Odin Bay area, those are all going to be eligible to vote in this election.
Yes.
And this is a you have to be registered to vote.
Yeah.
In the county. So if you're listening and you have not registered to vote, you should get out and register to vote.
Absolutely.
The election is coming up on May 19th, and people will be voting at their regular polling places for the county.
Right.
Now, Geraldine, tell us what inspired you to run for... Actually, let's back up. Tell us who you are. What's your background and what would you consider qualifications for... for your run for the seat?
Background. Well, I first came to the Northwest when I attended school at Gonzaga, and my degree's in electrical engineering, which is not necessarily a school board qualification, but you
could fix the lights if they went out, right?
There's all sorts of things I could do. But that analytical approach, that may come in handy. I'm detail-driven, data-driven, so those things might be useful. I met my husband there, and he's a native of Sagal, so that was where we naturally wanted to settle. We've been here 21 years. We've raised all four of our children in this school district and loved it. We're strong believers in public education. Both of us have had really great experiences in public education, and all four of our kids have. Our youngest is now a senior at Sandpoint High School, so this is a natural transition for me. I've been volunteering in the schools for 17 years, you know, following my kids along like every parent does, helped volunteer at Sagal Elementary, then at Sandpoint Middle School. Now I'm involved with the parent group at Sandpoint High School, the CARE group. And I'm looking forward to hopefully transitioning onto school board as a way to really see the district thrive the way they have been in the last few years and be part of that.
And you have been involved in a number of nonprofit organizations around town that
yes.
relate to this.
Yeah.
What are some of those?
Well, I've been an employee first and then a board member with Panhandle Alliance for Education. And their function with the school district is to help raise private funds to support education, to put money back in the classrooms, to help with teacher grants, to allow teachers to do some educating outside the box, things that wouldn't be possible. I have loved that opportunity.
I think Panhandle Alliance for Education, do they also do the Ready for Kindergarten program?
They do. That's one of their really exciting programs. And that is a program that allows the parents, as first educators of children, to really get in touch with helping their child along from age 0 to 5 be prepared for learning so that by the time they get to kindergarten, they're ready to learn and excited about it. And parents are the first educators and the most important educators through a child's whole life. So that program has been really successful here. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay, so you talked a little bit about your motivation for running. What would you identify as, personally, the biggest issues for you that the school district is facing?
Well, you know, three of the areas that the school is really focused on right now and the community's involved in is every year budget and how to, you know, how to have enough money for our school district. That seems to be a hot topic every 2 years when we vote for the levy. Another area is the Idaho Common Core. Those standards have been, debated, both sides, the pros and cons of that. That's another area they're really focused on. And then just the fact that we have some smaller rural schools, how to keep enrollment up and keep those schools thriving and to make sure we're able to fund those schools, that's a community concern. And those are kind of the three top areas of concern I've seen in attending school board meetings this past year. So
let's dig into each one of those a little bit more.
Roll up your sleeves.
So on budget, the school district gets its funding from actually a variety of sources. Mm-hmm. It gets a significant chunk of funding from the state.
Yeah.
However, our state does fund education at actually the lowest per capita
yes.
rate of any state in the
yes.
in the country. So most school districts, maybe all of them, I don't know, have to do supplemental levies, and mm-hmm. That's been no exception here. The school district did a supplemental levy. In terms of budget, do you feel like the school district is being conservative with its spending? Do you think they're being wise stewards of money?
I specifically wanted to attend all the meetings this past year, especially those special budget meetings that they held for the public to attend, because I wanted to see firsthand how they do approach this. And they go line by line. They made a great effort, led by Superintendent Woodward, to trim everywhere they could in ways that wouldn't compromise the safety of the students, firstly, but the quality level of education. And I feel like they really did that. They went through with a fine-tooth comb and tried to look at everything. You made a point that Idaho is the lowest in funding per student, and it just goes to show that we are able to do so much more with less money. We have really stretched the dollar. Well, I say we, but you know, hats off to the administration and the teachers. They have made every dollar count because we have an excellent school district. Yeah, it's been tough to make it work with such a small budget, you know, actually not very many dollars coming in. But that's one of the reasons every 2 years when they come forward with a request for levy money, I look at it pretty closely. I think they were very fiscally responsible when they kept it at the same level of the past 2 years. They didn't want to ask more of the community, but it would be hard to do less, you know, to accept less. So I felt they did an excellent job on the budget review this year.
One of the criticisms that I've seen in some of the other media was, and actually we did have Superintendent Woodward in prior to the levy election, and I had an interview with him. One of the criticisms I've seen is that, well, they passed the levy, but they're still having to cut out $1 million out of the budget. In fact, I will say that Superintendent Woodward did come in and say, even with the levy, we're still facing a budget cut of about $1 million. And it appears that they're actually seeing that come to fruition. They are having to cut that money.
They are having to make some cuts. And part of that is enrollment. If enrollment goes down, which it has a little bit here over the past few years, that impacts the dollar amount that comes both federally and state. You know, we're paid on a per student basis, actually how many student days they're at school. So yeah, those things all add up and they affect the bottom line of your budget.
Okay. So one of the other issues that you rattled off is one of your issues you're interested in or of concern is Common Core. So where do you stand? It's been somewhat controversial. Actually, that's one that has been controversial, if you will, kind of across the political spectrum.
Yes.
There are some folks that are very conservative that are opposed for it, and there's some folks that are quite liberal that are opposed to the Common Core. What is your position on Common Core?
It gets a strong reaction from a lot of people. I think that, for one thing, this school board of 5 members did not vote on whether to accept the Common Core or not. That happens at a state level, and I think some people are confused about that. But once Idaho said, you know, we're adopting the Idaho Common Core, our district, the administration did a good job of saying that we're going to prepare our teachers in the best possible way and have them ready with the tools at hand to actually teach to these new standards. One thing to add is that it's simply enhancing the standards that were in place. I can only speak personally by how it's affecting my own student at Sandpoint High School rather than, you know, the old method of rote memorization or these new standards allow her to analyze, process information, do research, think logically about a set of data and draw conclusions. It's strengthening the writing skills, strengthening math skills. Their goal is to better prepare for college and career readiness for their graduates. And I just don't see how that is a negative in any way. The rigor's a little more intense, but I think that the more we ask of our students, the more they rise to that. So I just don't see a downside. I'm impressed with the administration's attempts to have to educate and offer support to their teachers and staff and put this in place successfully. So,
well, one criticism I've heard as pertains to Common Core is that local school districts kind of lose control of the curriculum. But is that, in fact, the case here with Common Core?
I can't exactly say how much it's impacting every classroom. And I do know that anytime you're having to have a standardized test, you do need to teach that knowledge, the information that's going to be on there. I don't know that I can't say exactly how that's impacting each teacher's ability to express, you know, individual teaching style.
Okay. You also identified funding for rural schools and some of the particular issues that rural schools are facing. Mm-hmm. I think the kind of the big one would be Clark Fork High School.
It is.
Which is facing some large budget cuts.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your thoughts or proposals as pertain to rural schools and specifically the situation that Clark Fork High is facing?
Well, our small rural schools are one of our best features in this school district. People love Hope Elementary, Northside, Southside, our smaller schools. Clark Fork High School has a wonderful energy and feel to it, and the school spirit there is very high. I know their principal, Phil Kemmick, does a great job of teaching, but it's a small school, small classroom sizes. The school board meetings, the community members who've attended those are very emotionally engaged in that question of the vitality of their school, because it really is the vitality of a whole community, and it's a very important part of that community. They've talked about how to grow enrollment out there, because that will directly impact their budget and keep the school alive and going. I hope to be part of that the conversation about experiential learning and kind of expanding options out there to attract more people to the school, to the public school there. Those are all really positive conversations. I've seen Superintendent Woodward seems very open to looking at outside the box solutions to the situation there. Yes, some of the budget cuts are happening there, but I'm encouraged that Principal Phil Kemmink is working with the administration to come up with the best scenario so that, yes, with staffing cuts, they'll still be able to offer the same quality education, keep the school going, stay vital. And I do hope that happens. I think it's an important identity for us in this school district is our smaller schools. So that's why I also believe in passing the levy. I mean, we need community support and money for these small schools for that exact reason.
Going back to Clark Fork just for a second, mm-hmm. I know that they've become very creative in thinking, as you say, outside the box.
Right.
Even to the point of offering busing students out there.
Yes, they just were talking about that. That is not going to be cut in the budget. In fact, last night at the school board meeting, they told us that some forestry dollars were coming back in to the district, which is very encouraging. Every source of income is important. For the budget line items. And that's one, that busing to Clark Fork is something that is continuing.
And to clarify that, what students here, right here in Sandpoint, could elect to go to Clark Fork High School instead of Sandpoint High School via this program.
Yes.
And it might be a good alternative for a student that's not fitting in with the much larger social milieu that we have at the Sandpoint High.
Right.
One of the points that the principal at Clark Fork makes is that we have a small class size. So students get a lot of individual attention from their teachers there. So to listeners that might be interested in that, if you have a child that's not fitting in perhaps with a high school here, Clark Fork High School remains an option that you could check out. And there's busing that takes the kids out there.
I think that's one of the things they want to get more communication with the public about so that people know. I think right now it's kind of a hidden secret. And the more people know, the more they might take that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And that's not only the high school. I think that's the middle school also.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a good way of looking at how creative this school district has become and the board has become to solve some of the problems or the challenges that are faced nowadays with budget cuts and things like that. It is possible, but it does take initiative and creativity.
Yeah. And I witnessed this school board seems to really be cohesive and look at all solutions. I think Superintendent Woodward is open to so many new ideas. And that makes for, I think, a school board that's very effective.
One of the things you mentioned was that the amount of money that the district gets from the state, it depends on the number of students we have. As we add students, we get more money. We get money on a per student basis, basically. We do have a lot of homeschoolers here in Bonner County. And by virtue of choosing to educate their kids at home, do the homeschooling, then the school district ends up losing a little bit of revenue. Why do you think we have a lot of, well, first of all, do we have any hard numbers on the number of, do we have an unusually large number of homeschoolers here, do you think?
You know, I don't know the numbers on that. I'm pretty sure the administration does because they're keeping a close relationship now more with Superintendent Woodward than ever before, keeping a dialogue going with those families. Superintendent Woodward has recently talked about the new program where money does come back to our district if homeschool families opt to have even just 1 or 2 hours a week with a school employee, a teacher, and a student that's homeschooled. The state does recognize that and add money back in. So there's a lot of possibilities for kind of creative education opportunities where it's a combination of both.
Would you call that dual enrollment?
Well, dual enrollment actually refers to getting college credits when you're at the high school. So this kind of symbiosis between the homeschool and the public schools, this is kind of new. I do not know enough about it. I listen to all this dialogue in the school board meetings, and sometimes the acronyms and the references go right over my head. So I still have a lot to learn.
So if a homeschooled student wanted to take a biology class where all of the scientific mm-hmm. equipment and a well-trained labs. Teacher and mm-hmm. labs, they could do that. And then they would have that relationship with the school district and bring in mm-hmm. funding.
Extra dollars. And I think that has been in place, and that, and there's some new elements to it that I'm not specifically
and again, it's a matter of communication that mm-hmm. Folks that are homeschooling, it's good for them to know that they can just take parts of the public education system and use them.
Yes.
And I know that a lot of homeschoolers will participate in extracurricular activities, mm-hmm. sports, and so on,
right.
So that the kids get that, if you will, socialization opportunity.
Right.
So that's an avenue that's open to homeschooling families.
Right. I think the new part is just the dialogue that's happening between the district and the homeschool families. I think that is an exciting element to Woodward's.
The district's reaching out to superintendents specifically is reaching out to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So overall, Geraldine, do you believe that the district is doing a good job or a poor job in educating our students?
Well, I believe they're doing a good job. I've seen firsthand in my own children. I just think they got a great education, successfully launched into, you know, the next phase of their education. There are some statistics out there that speak really strongly. We're one of the top school districts with highest SAT scores in math and reading in the state. Superintendent Woodward tells everybody we have a 90% high school graduation rate. That is wonderful. 78% of the graduates of Sandpoint High School attend college or post-technical training of some sort. Those statistics are not by accident. I think that those are a result of inspired teachers, dedicated administration, people who really believe in excellence in education. And I'm excited about this school board because I want to see us continue along that path. Steve Youngdahl talks about wanting to be the best school district in the state. And I don't think having the current chairman of the school board. I don't think it's unrealistic to set very high goals. I think our students rise to the challenge.
Mm-hmm. And talking about the students, what about the teachers? It seems to me, from what I've read and heard, that they also have the same goals and enthusiasm yes. for creating a learning environment here in North Idaho that supports our young students.
Yes. And, you know, the more the community comes forward and supports education, this last levy passed with the highest margin ever, a 70% yes vote. That is a huge endorsement to our teachers. It says we believe in what they're doing. We don't want to cut their salaries. We don't want to diminish anything they have to do. That is huge accolades to the teachers. I am very excited to be part of that community that says yes to our schools.
Teachers need support. What are some of the ways, in your estimation or in your thinking or from what you've observed over the last year, having attended the board meetings, ways that the teachers can get support from the board, from the school district?
One of the things I'm excited about is it seems there's some energy and dollars going toward increased professional development for teachers. I think that just absolutely enhances what they're able to do. And it really leverages our dollars well, because with a little professional development, that's brought back into the district, spreads throughout the teachers, and increases the test results, everything, all of our scores for our district. I think that's a good leverage of our money. They're doing some new things called vertical alignment in the curriculum. Dr. Becky Meyer is working on this specifically. And it is the plan of having every year a seamless transition from grade level to grade level, so that what you learn in one grade flows into the next year curriculum. There's not gaps or unnecessary overlap, that all the teachers' curriculum aligns and builds upon it in the most effective way possible. And that sort of cohesive overview of education is really powerful. It makes for a great overall education experience. Mm-hmm.
A lot of teamwork. This is 88.5 KRFY, The Morning Show with Chris and Susie. And we're here in the studio with Geraldine Lewis, one of the candidates for seat 4 of the Lake Pontchartrain School District elections for trustee.
Thank you.
School trustee. And we did invite Geraldine's opponent, Tom Cleveland, in, and he elected not to come in. Geraldine, on moving on to other issues, would you seek any changes in the district curriculum? I know sometimes candidates come in with specific ideas on curriculum.
Not specific changes. I'm excited a little bit about this experiential learning that Superintendent Woodward has talked about this past year. They tried out this new classroom at Farm and Stidwell and have had just a huge amount of positive success and feedback from the community and the families who are involved in that. So I'm excited to see, you know, how far that curriculum can go.
When he was in a few weeks ago, he spoke to that as well. And it's actually kind of a one-room school sort of model where you have a number of different age groups all in the room together, learning together. They learn at different paces. And it gives the teachers the ability to work with students individually.
I think it is a great possibility. There's a wide range of students who learn in different ways, and a standard classroom of 28 students behind a desk, that's not their best learning model. So this really opens up possibilities for people.
Mentioned the $15.7 million supplemental levy. Specifically, did you vote for it or against it?
I did vote for it. I just believe strongly that that is the key to our success in this district, and I was proud of that.
I wanted to ask, will there be other opportunities to hear from the candidates? Is there a candidate forum that's going to happen? It would be nice to hear from all sides. And I wonder if there's any other opportunities coming up.
Not that I've heard of. I know that we've been asked to do, you know, a little candidate questionnaire for Sandpoint Online, and that's where some information's available online. I know that the school district themselves put some information up there. I think those are two of the opportunities to share our thoughts. The Daily Bee has requested some information from us so they can run kind of profile of the different candidates. I just don't know how much my opponent is participating in those.
Actually, I can speak since my company, Keoki, produces Sandpoint Online. We do have a section there called Election Central. Mm-hmm. And people can go to it if they go to sandpointelections.com. That's the direct link to it. Your opponent, Mr. Cleveland, didn't turn in our questionnaire either. I do know that the Daily Bee sent out a questionnaire to the candidate, so perhaps he'll be responding to that. But so far, he hasn't spoken up in any public forum that we've identified. So to your question, Susie, there's no organized forum that we know about. Sandpoint Online did consider doing a forum, as we have in many previous elections, but with only one candidate showing up, it's not
it'd just much, be me.
It's not much of a forum.
It's really nice to have, that you came in today
and actually we were hoping to make this program an on-air forum that people could listen to during this hour. Plus, this will be available as a podcast on the KRFY.org website. So it's being recorded. Geraldine, your
mind
words are,
my manners.
Yeah. Mind your manners. No cussing.
No cussing.
We tell everybody that before we go on the air, by the way.
And again, thank you for coming in. So the election's coming up. What's the date and where do people vote?
So the date is Tuesday, March 19th. It has been emblazoned on my brain. It's just under 2 weeks from now.
So the finish line is in sight.
Yes, yeah. I'm living and breathing May 19 right now. Actually, everyone votes at their polling place. So I have 4 different polling places in my own zone, and that's, you know, Sagal Senior Center for those people. There's one out in Garfield Bay. I think they vote at the sewer district up there. Odin Bay has a polling place at the Grange Hall there, and Cedar Hills Church is Kootenai's polling place.
Yes, and that information is available on the county website. I believe there's a link to it from the school district website, as well as the sandpointelections.com website. A couple more questions on your position on issues, if you will. So what do you see as the role of technology in education? Technology has obviously become really important.
Yeah, this is an area that's rapidly changing, you know, not just in our district, everywhere. It's something that we need a balance on. You know, we have to stay up to date. This is the way our students are taking in information, sharing information. It's just part of their daily lives. So it's a natural way for them to learn. On the other hand, you know, we don't have to stay right on the cutting edge of everything, since our dollars don't allow that. So there's a happy medium in there where we're doing everything we can for quality education, meeting the needs of the students. I don't think we have to be out there with the latest and greatest gadgets and gizmos, but technology is part of the classroom. There's a lot of online education opportunities. I think those are coming on board, and it just strengthens the opportunities available to every student. You know, being in a small rural Northwest town, everything our students can get their hands on, it's a benefit to them. So.
Okay. Here's another one that's occasionally a hot topic. What should the school district do about teaching values, such things as family life, sex education, AIDS, those sorts of things?
Well, I definitely believe that the home is the first and strongest place that students are learning. That's the primary place they learn their values, their social justice, relationship building, moral judgment, sex education. Those are all happening primarily in the home. However, there are situations where the students aren't getting that in the home. I don't think it is unrealistic to say that they're going to get it in the schools, whether it's from their friend group, you know, general media stream, or in the classroom. And we've trusted these teachers with the education of our students on a huge realm of important topics. And this is just another area where we have to trust that they're going to help share important, truthful knowledge with our students. They're not going to not learn about these issues. It's just the matter in which the information is shared. And I don't think it's unrealistic that some of that has to be in the classroom.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Is that all of your questions, Chris?
We went through my list. Okay. Geraldine, so if someone's weighing their vote and they wanted to contact you with a specific question, how would they do that?
Well, I have put my phone number out there. Everybody has had that phone number. They can call me at 290-7148.
It's area code 208.
208-290-7148. I've also been taking comments on my Facebook site, which is Geraldine Lewis for LPOSD Trustee. And I also have an email address that a lot of people have been communicating with me, and that is a little harder. GERSLEW@hotmail.com. So those are ways people can reach me. And it's a small town. Mm-hmm. If you don't reach me by phone, you'll run into me in Safeway.
See you on the street.
Yep.
Again, we just really want to thank you for coming in. It's so helpful to encourage our voters with information, and that's one of the goals of KRFY, is to bring information to people, to our listeners, so they have an informed vote.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
And I want to remind our listeners of a few things. We have coming up tomorrow on the KRFY Morning Show, a full house with Jack and Diane at 8 o'clock. It's the Thursday edition of the Morning Show. Two groups will be in. The first group is Dennis Pence, Kurt Hecker, and Susan Edwards representing Food for Our Children Project. And then Susan Drumheller from the Idaho Conservation League, along with Shannon Williamson from the Lake Ponderay Waterkeeper, will be in to talk about upcoming events centered around coal train issues. That's tomorrow at 88.5 at 8 a.m. Next Tuesday, Chris and I will, I'll be here by myself with my gardening friends. We're going to have garden talk. Chris, you'll have Tuesday off, but Wednesday, what's coming up on Wednesday, Chris?
Wednesday, we're going to dive back into the school trustee race. We'll be talking about Zone 4, two candidates there have both been invited in. That's Joel Molander, who is the incumbent, and Kathy Rose. Joel has confirmed, and Kathy, we're not sure yet if she's going to come in, but the door is open right up until airtime for that. So we hope we have both those candidates, and we'll certainly have at least Joel, and we will be talking about Zone 1. That'll be the last broadcast we have prior to the May 19th election.
Okay. I also want to remind our listeners that, first of all, thank you for listening today. And enjoy this beautiful day. The song you're going to hear next is Lindsay Lou and the Flatbellies, a song called The Fix. And the reason you're going to hear this is because they will be performing along with Patchy Sanders at the Panada for a KRFY benefit concert on May 29th. Tickets are now available at Eichhart's, Eves Leaves, POAC office next to the Panada, panada.org, and patchysanders.com. And also here at the KRFY radio station, you can call 265-2992. Tickets are $10 in advance and $12 at the door. And this is a KRFY Panhandle Community Radio benefit concert. So don't miss this sure-to-be-entertaining evening of Celtic, folk, and bluegrass music infused with sublime harmonies from these two nationally recognized bands. And here is Lindsay Lou and the Flatbellies. We hope you enjoy your day.
Bye now.
I am bored, tired, old bag of tricks. I need a fix, a friend.